everyone. Thank you for joining me today. I am Mindy. I am joined in studio with Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits and Charles from Dunbar Kitchen and Tap House. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, this meal that we have in front of us today, this is some comfort food. It's, if I'm on a nice cold day, I need a warm meal. But today, it's summer, it's August, and we are here and we are enjoying some grilled cheese and tomato soup. But what type of grilled cheese sandwich is this? This has got a special name to it, Charles.
It does. It is the best damn grilled cheese. Am I allowed to say damn on the radio?
We'll say the best darn.
The best darn grilled cheese.
Okay.
Well, if it's the name of something,
this
maybe.
Is true. Yeah, so.
But,
D-A-M.
Yeah. There we yes. go. There we go.
The best D-A-M.
Yes. So this is actually one of our top sellers. At the restaurant, we sell a ton of grilled cheese and tomato soup, not just to folks that are vegetarians, but to everybody. I think everybody loves grilled cheese and soup at some point in their
life. Well, tomato soup especially.
Yeah, and it's tomato season now, so
exactly.
Even though we're using San Marzano tomatoes, this could definitely be made with something fresh from your garden as well.
Yeah. So. Charles presented a couple different options for this month's food and wine pairing, and I thought we should go with the grilled cheese and tomato soup because it is tomato season, and what a great way to use them. I mean, it's great to use them just fresh and whole, but sometimes you have certain varietals that are better cooked, and so I thought it would be fun. This conjures up images for me from my childhood or being home during summer when you can have lunch or you can make lunch. And this is a perennial favorite. But when I was a kid, or even now as an adult, one of the challenges, I think, with making grilled cheese is that you don't get this consistent crispiness. Yes. You should go check out the picture on the website because it's really beautiful.
It is.
And then also to have such thick bread and get melted cheese on the inside while still having, not steaming your bread, but having that crispy exterior. So give us a few tidbits on making grilled cheese sandwiches.
Sure. So with our grilled cheese sandwich, we do things a little bit differently. We not only put a blend of cheddar, jack, and provolone on the inside, we also mix freshly grated Parmesan cheese with butter. We let that get to about room temperature and do a nice smear onto thick sliced sourdough bread. The real key with this is not having your pan too hot or too cold because the cheese needs time to melt, but you don't want the outside to burn. Mm-hmm. So we try to go for a nice, even medium heat. We start with the bread next to each other on each side with the cheese on top of each side. And we don't put the sandwich together until it's about 3/4 of the way cooked. Then we put it together and then we finish it so the heat from each side finishes melting the cheese
okay.
for us.
That's good to know because I think I was raised with you do one side and then you flip it over and you do the other side. And also, I do remember now that you said it, sometimes having lots of little black spots on my grilled cheese. And this one is definitely perfect.
Well, we always go for golden brown and delicious. Mm-hmm. And I think we got it this time. Mm-hmm. So
I think it's good, too, because like I said, when I think of grilled cheese and tomato soup, the first thing I think is, oh, I can only do that during the winter or the fall or something else. So I didn't even make the connection of it's tomato season,
yeah.
You know,
okay.
So that's.
And also, I don't think that this is necessarily heavy and it doesn't have meat in it. So it's kind of nice. And sometimes you don't want to be in the kitchen very long. And I don't think, talk about the tomato soup, but you don't need to cook that for hours.
So no, the tomato soup is pretty quick to make. And just as a side note, this time of year when it's really hot outside, and it seems to be really hot in Denver this summer, doing gazpacho would work really well with mm-hmm. this too. So a nice cold soup with this, maybe a little different in your mouth just because you've got a hot and a cold playing against each other. The soup itself does not take that long. We use not just tomatoes. We do some onion, we do some carrot, and we put a little bit of potato in ours as well because we try to keep ours dairy-free until we put the cheese on top.
Yeah.
That way, if a vegan wants some tomato soup, the tomato soup is vegan until we put the Parmesan on.
Okay.
So we saute those vegetables down. Once they're nice and soft, then we add the tomatoes. We add our seasonings, our garlic and everything, right before the tomatoes go in. We finish it up after it simmers for about a half hour or so when all the flavors get together. Then we toss in some sprigs of basil, pour in a bunch of olive oil because it helps it be nice and creamy, and olive oil is healthy, right? So once it's all done, then we blend it together. And that little bit of starch from those little bits of potato that we throw in there helps hold everything together and just make it ultra smooth and creamy without having to add dairy to it.
It's basically like a four cheese grilled cheese.
It is. Just one of the cheeses on the outside.
That's okay.
And just for clarification, I know you mentioned shaving the Parmesan and the butter, and then you spread that on the exterior.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, or grate it. And then how about the cheese on the inside? Do you use shredded cheese for that as well?
Right. We grate everything, and we mix everything together so it's an even blend.
Yep.
All the way through, and that way everything, you don't get one spot that has one particular flavor and move to another spot that doesn't.
And hopefully our listeners will take a little bit of time and go for the real stuff and not settle for American cheese, which I know people love, but I think it's kind of weird.
Oh, I love it too.
I know.
Everybody does. It's part of the culture.
Yeah.
But this, particularly if you're going to be drinking wine and enjoying things like that, it's having the different layers of flavor that help play with the wine and play with the tomato soup.
Now, Charles, you mentioned wine, and Carolyn, you brought a white wine to go with this meal, so why not a red? Or is that...
Well, this certainly would go with red wine, okay. And I would pair it with something brighter and fresher, maybe like a Pinot Noir or even a little Chianti or something, but this month was really fun for me because I actually got to choose the wine first.
Okay.
And then we did the food pairing. Charles made a couple of different suggestions. I really wanted to feature this type of wine because we haven't done something like this in a while. And also I recently went to a lunch where I met the winemaker again, and he's really a pioneer in the wine business.
Okay.
His name is Randall Graham, but he was fascinated with Burgundy and he wanted to bring that fascination to California. And he had land in Santa Cruz, and as he planted Pinot Noir, he discovered, well, Pinot doesn't really thrive in Santa Cruz. And so he met with a very famous importer named Kermit Lynch and then became interested in Rhone varietals. And he found some really old vine, Grenache and Mourvèdre. So those are two different types of grapes, like a Cabernet or a Pinot. So Grenache and Mourvèdre are the grapes, and he found these very old vines and began to make a knockoff of a wine in France that's called Chateauneuf du Pape. And so his first release was the 1984 vintage in 1986. And what I really love about him and how he's such a pioneer is that he's been doing things that are now in vogue, but he's been doing them for 40 years. He's really forward-thinking in that he was one of the first to really take biodynamic farming to a commercial level. He also labels everything that's in his wine. So that's really cool because, like on this wine, I think it says the grape varietals, which are Grenache and Roussanne, oak barrels, and a little bit of clay bentonite, which helps with the fining in it. But that's what's in the wine, so the consumer knows exactly what goes into the bottle.
This particular wine, were you thinking maybe too with the cheese? Or?
So this wine, I thought it would go well with the tomato soup because I had Charles cooking before, and I knew that, you know, his soup was going to be reflective of a real tomato, which can be sweet rather than acidic.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, plus he's been at our chili cook-off a few times, and he's done very well there. And so I knew that he would do well with the soup. And so I thought, you know, a white wine that has acidity and also a certain roundness to it would complement rather than oppose the tomato soup. And I knew for sure that it would go with the butter and the cheese that was in the bread.
It all came together very nicely, by the way.
Yeah.
And I know I've always said this, I'm more of a sweet wine, more of a desserty type of wine. But this wine, I'm like, okay, this isn't making me turn away. I'm coming back for this wine, which I normally don't. And it's nothing, not a reflection on you, but it's just where I'm at. I'm always like, oh, I want the sweet. But this one is just very, it's different from what I've tasted from before.
It is. So these are varietals that you don't commonly see. So it is definitely unique. If you were in Rhone, France, and you wanted white wines, these would be more common varietals. What you probably like here is that it has a lot of aromas that smell like it might be sweet, like floral aromas or some orange flower or peach, perhaps.
Oh,
but then when you taste it, it's dry, but not not too acidic, and it also has this roundness and this what we call viscosity in the mouth. So you feel this richness in the mouth that you don't get on a lot of wines, like maybe a Sauvignon Blanc, something like that. It's fun to try different varietals. I think also, so this might be a wine that would bridge the gap for people like you that say, you know, I prefer something sweeter. I know you like Moscato.
I love, yes.
Yeah. But it also appeals to a Chardonnay drinker because this wine also sees oak, and it has that rich mouthfeel to it, and a sort of creaminess and a little bit of butteriness, and still retaining a little bit of brightness that a Chardonnay might have. So I think this is a great wine that is very versatile with food, and it's also versatile with people.
Now, okay, month of August, is this going to be one of the wines that you're going to be tasting and sampling this month?
Yeah, so we're tasting this wine tonight, and we also have a rosé from Randall Graham at Bonnie Dune Vineyards, and we have a Grenache, because that's really what his love is right now, is Grenache. And so we're going to be tasting those three wines. He makes lots of different wines. He's a real comic as well, so he does a lot of different funny labels, and he's just very genuine, and his wine is a real reflection of, you know, his farming practices, which he's been doing, like I said, forever, in terms of biodynamic and dry farming and not using chemicals and labeling the wines. And also, another really interesting facet to Randall Graham's wines is that he is a pioneer of the screw cap. So he was really disenchanted with corks, because oftentimes, especially a few decades ago, there was a lot of failure with corks, where meaning that air, they would just dry up and that air would get to the wine, and then the wine would get corked. So it has a real, it turns bad, basically. And for a time, spoilage was about 10%, which is really high. So 1 in 10 of your bottles was likely to be corked. And then he experimented with synthetic corks, and he definitely didn't like those. He actually had a cork funeral. And then he finally, yeah, so that's that shows you a little bit how he gets out there. But he finally found these screw caps. And I learned a lot about screw caps, because there's liners to screw caps too.
Oh, so it
kind of depends on what screw cap you're using. But he calls them brilliant. And it allows the winemaker to use less of a preservative, which is sulfur dioxide. So they can use less sulfur dioxide. And it also retains its freshness and the liveliness of the wine longer than a cork would.
So just on a side note, because this is just my curiosity now, what is the best way to store my wine? So if I get it, is it straight up, or do I tilt it, or is it laid flat? How do you?
Generally, you would want a wine on its side, because you want to keep the cork moist.
Okay.
In all honesty, I think, I'm not exactly sure of the answer, but I think if you have a screw cap, it probably doesn't matter, because the integrity of the cap doesn't depend on being moist. So that's one reason why you want it on its side. I think what affects the storage of wine most is heat. If you have to prioritize, the first thing you want to do is keep your wine in a cooler place. Let's say, if you can, anything below 65 degrees. Optimum would be around 59.
Okay.
So you want to keep it cooler, away from heat, a steady temperature, and then avoid light. And then have it be on its side. So if you're going to prioritize storing your wine, it would be keeping it away from heat, keeping it away from light and in a darker place, and then putting it on its side.
Good. Now, Charles, I know Carolyn is going to be sampling and doing the wine tasting this month, but anybody could walk in anytime to your location.
Anytime they can walk in and have this. Well, anytime we're open.
Yes,
let's
say
that.
within limits. So
this is always on our menu, and as a matter of fact, it is generally our number one or number two seller, depending on how cold it is outside.
Okay. So. Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? So do you sell more when it's cold?
We sell a lot more when it's cold.
But we still
sell a whole lot when it's warm outside, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we do also on Saturday and Sunday morning brunch, we do a breakfast version of this as well, where we'll fill it with eggs and sausage or ham.
Oh, my
or
gosh.
sautéed vegetables. So it turns into a big sandwich. And at brunch, with a sandwich that big, we don't really need the soup. So we do a salad tossed in a little lemon thyme vinaigrette to go with it, which is great because the acid from the vinaigrette helps cut the fat from the cheese and the butter. So kind of doing the job that the wine is doing here.
Right, so. Yeah, because you want to balance everything. You don't want to be overwhelmed by one texture or one flavor.
Did not have thought of that. I'm just in my head, I'm just thinking, oh, it's a grilled cheese deluxe. I'm, you know, with all, everything in it. Now, I said location earlier, you are located at?
2844 Welton Street. Okay. So we're half a block from the studios here.
Yes, very close. You're a favorite for lunchtime around here, so.
Yes, I saw a few people in this afternoon for lunch before I came over.
And website address and telephone number?
Website is www.DunbarKitchenAndTapHouse.com. And the best way to reach us on the phone is 720-630-7641.
Okay, and Carolyn, 6th and Marion.
Yep, 6th and Marion. And our number is 303-744-6219. And we always have this wine. But tonight you can come in and taste it and see what you think.
Hours for the tasting?
Well, interesting. Colorado law just changed. So it's kind of until supplies run out. It used to be that we had to have it done by 7 o'clock. But as long as we still have some wine, we'll have it open.
Oh, don't tell me that on Moscato night because I'll never leave. No, I'm kidding. And then, Charles, what are the hours for Dunbar?
We open every day during the week at 11 a.m. We close the kitchen about 10 o'clock at night. We do a little late night snack and some drink specials, $5 glasses of wine on our house, red and white, starting at 9:30 or 10:30 at night, depending on whether it's the weekend or not. Weekend brunch starts at 10 a.m., so we're open an hour early on that.
And any Wednesday specials that you all have?
So Wednesday, we don't do... don't do anything on Wednesday. Okay. We do a Thursday night.
Oh, so tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow night we have generally live music
on
Thursday nights. A lot of times it's, you know, one person on keyboards or acoustic. Sometimes we get a couple of people in. We also run canned beer specials. So almost every can and bottle that we have of beer is $3 during the music. So, screaming deal on craft beer for Colorado.
All right, great. Well, I just want to say thank you both very much for stopping by today, and a nice little salute.